It's Sunday afternoon, and you know what that means. Well, for most people, it actually probably means football or some other sporting event. But for devotees of cheese and the Heritage Radio Network, it's Cutting the Curd. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby, and this episode of Cutting the Curd on Heritage Radio Network is sponsored by Wisconsin Cheese Originals. So thank you to them. And is being produced and engineered by Jack Inslee and Nat Wiener. Our topic today, cheese in the restaurant. And who better to give us the lowdown than Chris Bradley, who is the sous chef and cheese man par excellence at Gramercy Tavern. We'll talk about how a restaurant like Gramercy goes about building a stellar cheese board and what pushed Chris into the world of curds and whey. And today we have a special guest co-host slash just guest in general, Mateo Keeler, who is has previously been a guest on the show. He's an owner and cheesemaker at Jasper Hill Farm and is going to be all over the sound effects board. So watch out. Or we'll be in the future. We're gonna practice during the break. So welcome, Mateo and Chris. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Anne.
Yes. So Chris, tell me, how long have you been at Gramercy?
I've been with Gramercy almost 3 years now.
Okay.
But I've been in charge of the cheese program for about a year and a half. So.
And so the cheese for a year and a half now. That was an interesting thing to me. How is it decided in a big restaurant organization like Gramercy who takes charge of the cheese program?
You know, it had always been a sous chef. And I think, you know, you knew Molly, who had the job before I did. She was the first sort of front of the house person who took that. And I think that was just personal interest. So it comes mostly from someone who has a personal interest like I did and then availability.
Okay. Yeah, that seems the sous chef. That's an interesting choice for, I guess, pastry chefs also sometimes get in charge of, or get, you know, the command of the cheese board.
Yes. Yeah. We do a mix. Actually, my training, I do work with both the staff who sells things off the cheese board as well as the pastry department, which puts together the chef selection. So it's a mix. It's front of the house and back of the house.
I like that. And the cheese board at the Gramercy Tavern, which is a beautiful restaurant off Union Square, just in case any of our listeners aren't familiar with it. The cheese board at Gramercy is pretty special. It's just a spectacular presentation. Can you describe for us what the cheese board is at Gramercy?
Sure. You know, to fit in with our sort of rustic Americana theme, It's what it says. It's a board. It's a wooden slab that features anywhere in a low point 16 at a high point 22 artisan cheeses, a mix heavy on the domestic with a smattering of cheeses from the continent, but almost exclusively our American cheeses come from the Northeast. We as someone who professes a farm to table philosophy, we like to keep it local. So
that's great. And increasingly there are just so many great Northeastern cheeses to be tapped into.
The variety of cheeses, obviously someone's gonna be a proponent and say you can find them better on the West Coast, but I'm gonna argue that bang for my buck, I can find a better cheese made locally within a couple hundred miles than anything you could bring me from the West Coast.
Absolutely. Well, you're East Coast
born and bred. So
yeah. Now I agree.
That's the farm. That's the classic farm designation.
Time
for
to
I
make
agree.
The donuts.
Yes. So can you tell us about a couple of the Northeastern cheeses that are on your board right now that
sure.
you're really excited about?
Sure. I'll get to the Jasper Hill cheeses later to save them for the finale.
Who's that?
It's this guy I know. It's hovering over me. You know, one thing that people love are the rich, creamy cheeses. So we've got the Kunick from Nettle Meadow, which is Thurman, New York. Just a little off the Vermont border, probably 2.5 to 3 hours north. It's made in the style of a Brioche Savarin, so it's a rich, creamy triple creme, meaning it's about 72% butterfat. And who doesn't like that?
Yeah.
We've also featured recently a lot of the Twig Farm Cheese's small raw, strictly raw goat cheese producer.
Love Twig Farm.
Let's see, where are we at? Taryn Tays from, we're featuring right now, the Springbrook Farm, winner of its class at ACS this year.
Absolutely. That cheese is just great. I mean, for, yeah, I don't know, for everything. Well, texture, yeah, flavor.
And for its model that the two guys are trying to bring together of sharing the idea of cheese making between two farms. That's leaps and bounds towards where American cheesemakers should be leading themselves.
Yeah, actually, Mateo, maybe you can talk about that for a second. Just the idea of two farms making the same cheese. Tarantez is a cheese that's made at Springbrook Farm, but also at Thistle Hill Farm.
Yeah, and, it's a great model. John Putnam and Janine Putnam from Thistle Hill actually licensed their product to farmsforcitykids.org. Look them up on the website there. They're an amazing organization. They bring inner city kids up to Vermont to spend a week, 10 days on the farm. And they use the Springbrook Tarantes to help finance that work. And as a model, really having two producers of the same product is an evolution that is going to ensure that those products survive on the landscape. It's a big deal.
Okay, so how do you think, I totally agree, and I think it's a totally important step, and how do you think that people are going to overcome the, because right now the two Tarantes are pretty different in texture and flavor and everything like that. First of all, do you think that's important? How important is it? And then second of all, how do you imagine that, gap would be bridged to make make more similar cheeses coming from a myriad of producers that all have different hands and different sensibilities and all that?
Well, our approach has always been to celebrate diversity and difference within a certain bandwidth of quality. So, vive la différence. I think it really comes down to learning how to market a product collectively and understanding your customers and who likes what flavor profile and selecting cheeses. So, that would be that's the natural next evolution for that business model.
Interesting. So tell us, do you have any Jasper Hill cheeses on the Gramercy cheese board right now?
We've got a couple. We're featuring one made at Jasper Hill, one aged by Jasper Hill. Actually two aged by Jasper Hill. We've got new this season, the Moses Sleeper, bloomy rind, supple, creamy, with lots of unctuous mushroom tones going through. Brie style, which is always popular with the cheese consumers. The Oma, that is made by the famous singing Von Trapp family. Washed rind, not super gooey, still firm, but with lots of bite to it. A real
minger. I love the Oma.
A minger, as I've heard someone call it before.
A minger?
A real minger. and then finally the Cabot cloth bound, the bread and butter, if you will, of Jasper Hill.
Yeah, and just plain old dessert to everybody else. Yeah. It's the most sweet, wonderful, caramely cheddar you'll ever taste.
You will not find better than this at all.
So that's interesting. So from your viewpoint, you see, how people order cheese in a restaurant. And do you find that there are certain cheeses that get more play or more attention than others?
For sure. What we try to do and what I try to do in constructing the board is take enough of what one would call the home run hit, something everybody's going to love and enjoy, and then mix in something that's approachable, something that maybe isn't something you would order, but in educating the staff and getting them excited about cheeses, doing like we did earlier today, bringing Mateo in to talk about cheeses, that gets the staff excited. It gets that word on their lips, and then they're able to sell it and say, you're looking for this style of cheese, but here's what I have that's similar.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you try it, you're going to be excited. We have the range to be able to just give someone a small slice and say, you know, I wanted you to try this cheese. I know you only wanted three, but here's a fourth one for you on the house. Try this. And you know what I'm trying to do is the dollar amount that I'm losing there, I'm hoping that I get it back the next time they come in.
Absolutely. Cheese propaganda.
Yes.
I'm all about that. Give people a taste of something they didn't know they liked, and all of a sudden you've got, like, you've educated them and you've got a new, you know, fan for life.
I have more than one fan. Yeah, hopefully they're bringing people back with them who are clamoring for the cheese. So.
Hey, little girl, you want a piece of candy?
Is that how they sell cheese up in Vermont, Mateo?
No, that's more down here in New York.
That's true. Yeah. That's definitely a New York thing.
I've been doing business with Gramercy Tavern pretty much since we started making cheese. Gramercy was one of our first customers.
Wow.
And
when was that? That was...
We started making cheese in 2003, and we started selling cheese to Gramercy Tavern in 2003. And the buyer at the time was a young guy named Andy Fortgang, who started working at Gramercy, I think, when he was like 16.
Wow.
He was he ended up...
Sounds illegal. Hold on.
Yeah, it was kind
Danny
of amazing.
Meyer is known for his labor practices. We can edit that out. No.
He plugged right in there. He was really a prodigy. He sought us out, and we started shipping him Constant Bliss and then Bailey Hayes and Blue. And for the first 3 years we were in business, Gramercy Tavern was actually in our top 10 customers, sales, dollars-wise. And... it's
are,
one of the.
Are you subtly applying pressure now?
Have we
dropped to the top 10?
No, our business has just grown. Our business has just grown. But my point here is that the capacity of a restaurant like Gramercy Tavern to actually sell large piles of cheese is really significant and can make a big difference for small farmstead producers. So. That commitment to local and domestic cheeses is kind of amazing. And the time spent coming in to do staff trainings pays off in spades, because essentially you have the opportunity to speak to about 45 salespeople that are going to go out on the floor, and you're arming them with information, and they're, dinner is theater at Gramercy. It's kind of amazing to watch like a totally professional team of servers go out and work the floor. And so as a cheesemaker, having the opportunity to work with a business like Gramercy Tavern is pretty amazing. And the impact that they can have on a small business is tremendous.
Well, that's very interesting. I was going to say there are a lot of good synergies there. First of all, it's just, the good feelings and the passion that you put into your cheese making is, sort of transmitted then through people like Chris and the staff at Gramercy, because, they're promoting not only your specific cheeses, but the idea of local cheese and small dairy farming, which is super important. They're also making an economic, contribution. I think it's just great to have an establishment like Gramercy really, putting at the forefront cheeses like that are coming from smaller producers and just being pioneers of letting people know what's going on with the world of American cheese. Because, to be honest, that's really people look to you guys as trendsetters and as to tell them what tastes good. So,
well, thank you. I think there's lots of compliments in there. And I will try to be the superhero that uses his power for good and continue to to keep my focus local. And
there must be a sound effect for this in here somewhere.
Does the Olympic theme play anywhere?
Yeah. Well, while you look for the superhero sound effect, you can. I wanted to ask you, Chris, more in depth about the education piece, because
sure.
I feel like Gramercy is unique in that it really, as an establishment, takes pride in making every member of the staff feel very empowered and very knowledgeable and very much a part of the process. And so how have you kind of incorporated those ideas into the cheese program and the sort of different different seminars that you organize for your staff.
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the beauties is because of the way we treat our staff and our customers and the sort of business model we go after, we have some servers who've been with the restaurant for 15 years since we opened up. So we have a good base to work with. So my job becomes keeping them informed of what we're doing as we move forward, as we make subtle changes on the cheese board. But they have that knowledge base.
It's a lot to remember. That's another thing. Well, it's really impressive to come to Gramercy and see 30 cheeses on the board sometimes, and the staff, you know, can remember all of them.
But if you compare it to, say, the wine program, where you may have 30,000 bottles, no one knows every bottle. But what I try to teach them is know the groups of cheeses. You know, let's say the fresh, the bloomy rind, the washed rind, the pressed uncooked, and the pressed cooked, and the blues. And if you know one in each of those groups, anytime someone wants to buy, say, a 7 cheese plate, if you can at least name 8 to 9 cheeses, less than half of the board, you can make a 7 cheese sale, no problem. And a good 7 cheese sale.
Yeah. So I think a lot of people are going to be eating entirely Jasper Hill selections this evening at Gramercy.
I can see. I just hope I bought enough of the Moses Sleeper to make it last until I get back at work. So
ruh-roh.
So I see it moving off our shelves. It's going to be easy to sell with this the way we got the staff excited today talking about, you know, the future of Jasper Hill. You know, the vision for Vermont dairy farms and what a cheese like this is going to do for moving forward.
Well, I think it's time to take a quick break. So we're going to have a little musica, but when we come back, we're going to talk more about cheese at Gramercy Tavern and how you got sort of interested in the world of fromage.
Sounds great.
Okay. Welcome back to Cutting the Curd on Heritage Radio Network. Our show has been sponsored today by Wisconsin Cheese Originals. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby, and I'm here today with Chris Bradley of Gramercy Tavern and Mateo Keeler of Jasper Hill Farm. And we are talking about cheese in the restaurant and how you know, a good cheese board is built, how a good cheese program works. And Chris is overqualified to come in and talk to us about that. But I want to know about how you got into cheese. What was like your seminal cheese moment where all of a sudden you're just like, whoa?
Well, strangely, it has Vermont roots. I in 99 was going to school at the New England Culinary Institute, which outside of Burlington, and had an opportunity to do a wine and cheese pairing with a lady named Madeline Common, who's written. A famous sort of cookbook called How to Be a Chef.
Okay.
Becoming a Chef. I forget the name of it at this point. Sorry.
But Madeline Common. How do you spell her last name?
I want to say it's K-A-M-A-N. Maybe it's two N's. It's, sort of the French Julia Child. She was sort of the home cook who taught people how to cook high-class cuisine in France. And then in her retirement moved to the Burlington area. So
weird, she moved from France to Burlington. She must have just sensed it before everybody else did.
She's knew like, where food was moving. Yeah. So that was probably like my first experience with non-commercial cheese and seeing the variety of flavors, the way it pairs with wine, the difference in tasting a cheese with the rind and without the rind, and it was just eye-opening. And I at that point decided that I wasn't actually going to do a strictly culinary internship and tried to get some internships with Shelburne Farms, but at this point, no one was offering a paid internship. And if there was one thing I was looking for was to be at least be paid something for my...
Well, that's why people get into cheesemaking.
For the money,
it's a quick way to get rich.
Yeah.
No.
There's drugs, prostitution, and then cheese, I think,
yeah. Is there a...
Bah, bah.
Yeah. Oh, there's a foghorn. We got to find the foghorn.
I don't know. I think the baby crying might be sick.
Oh, there you go. Let's... we got to do that. I think you got to switch the bay on the top there. It'll go into like bay B, C, or D on the sound effects. You got to choose the bay and then choose your sound effect.
Yeah, let's go E.
So this is the sound, everyone, of cheesemakers getting rich while making cheese.
9.
Yes.
Beware, any of you out there who are tempted to become cheesemakers. No, very satisfying work, but very hard work.
Yes. And so then, just as my culinary career grew, I obviously didn't take the job with Shelburne Farms, moved to New York and started working at restaurants, and then had just kept my finger in cheese programs as I've gone until I finally got the opportunity to grasp the one here at Gramercy Tavern and have made the last year and a half, full force learn as much as I can from these people I know, like Anne Saxelby and Matteo Keeler, who seem to, the cheese world is like a small family, and once you know two or three, you start running across everybody everywhere you go and realizing
it's a small, cheesy world. Yeah. But it's
and,
good
and
folks.
That world converges at Gramercy. It's kind of cool.
Well, I would say this has been a wild week. I've had, I guess there were a lot of people in town to do some promotional things, and I've had quite a few of them roll through Gramercy.
Who was in town?
Allison from Vermont Cheese and Butter.
Okay, Allison Hooper, everybody, an awesome woman, Vermont, goat cheese pioneer in the United States.
Or the fairy godmother of cheese making in Vermont.
Right,
She's awesome. I think if you described her as the fairy godmother to her face, what do you think she would say?
I've done that.
I love it. Yeah. And Allison Hooper just wrote a new book, too, so we should say that. Anyone who wants to know about Vermont butter and cheese and, how to... cook with really excellent fresh goat cheese or fresh dairy products like their creme fraiche and butter.
Her the name of the book is In a Cheesemaker's Kitchen. It's a beautiful book.
It's awesome. Yeah.
We had Dave from
Rogue
River. Yeah.
David Gremmels.
The two of them were actually
Magical Dave.
Yeah, Magical Dave. So he was having a magical night last night. We had a great time tasting and eating and giving him the full Gramercy treatment.
That comes with a massage.
Yes, it does.
after dinner.
Just the feet, though.
You're like a little Kobe beef, and they just like need your feet.
They feed you foie gras and then need your feet. Yeah.
Pound, disperse the fat throughout your body. Again, a cheese world, at least a New York cheese world celebrity, Tia Keenan.
Tia. She was a guest on the show once.
In last night to have a little bite with some friends. And I feel horrible. I've forgotten her name. The wife of the maker from Thistle Hill,
Janine
was in just the other night. It's been crazy. It's felt like,
well, and for a cheesemaker too, to be able to see their cheeses represented in that way, and Gramercy is always so generous to, their producers and everything. It's just really, I feel like, for cheesemakers, it's just got to be so fun and gratifying and just kind of amazing to come into a place like Gramercy, and all of a sudden they are like the celebrities. You guys totally treat them like celebrities, and it's really cool.
Janine hadn't, no idea. She didn't introduce herself. No one knew. Mm-hmm. And then she started looking at the cheese board and was talking really, intelligently about what was on the board, and
you're like, who is this?
Well, that's what the staff, the one thing we have is, the front of the house and the back of the house aren't afraid to talk to each other like they are in many restaurants. And he said, hey, there's this lady who's really knows what she's talking about when I showed her the cheese menu. And he's like, you want to stop by the table and see what's going on? So it took me like all of 2 seconds to say, like, so, you seem to know what you're talking about, what's your involvement? And instantly I knew I had somebody highly connected in the world, so...
Gramercy should give tips to, like, the CIA and, like, government, you know, operatives about how to get information and communicate. Yes. It seems like you guys are better at communicating than, like, all those organizations.
Luckily, we're not so bureaucratic. We, we don't have to file forms, and we do a lot of face-to-face.
Sure, sure. That is great. Well, so what, I don't know, is it, do you think that there is cheese in your future? I know this may be a sort of controversial question, but I just feel like I have to ask because you love it so much.
I don't, you know, my career arc has been more towards product-based. You know, one thing I do at Gramercy a lot is the charcuterie program. I've started turning in... We love to use whole animals, so I've started turning those bicuts into pastrami. I just took my first successful stab at blood sausage, which I couldn't sell, but I can give away to special guests. And it's again one of those things where it's not something you would eat or order on your own, but if I'm going to give it to you, it's going to change your mind. It's going to change your perception of what a good blood sausage is. And
yeah,
I was myself impressed with the end product. Light, fluffy, not too irony like liver, but rich. And
that sounds delicious to me. I like blood sausage. I lived in Spain for a little while and, you know, ate plenty of that.
Yeah. So my career arc has definitely been more towards a product based life, and I love my life at Gramercy because it affords me that. You know, I would say cheese is probably a solid third to half of what I spend my day doing.
Wow.
On top of, you know, expediting and watching the kitchen for the dinner service. So who knows? Cheese will always be part of my future.
Very cool. Well,
thanks for putting me on the spot. I hope nobody's listening.
Oh, but you never know, because everybody at Jasper Hill is banking on me dragging this guy back to the farm with me. So look out.
Well, this is going to be, you know, a long evening at Roberta's, and, you know, maybe after a couple beers and a couple pizzas,
I wake up in Vermont.
You wake up in Vermont. You just don't know what happened.
What is that strange thing floating in the bottom of my beard? It's pill capsules.
Yeah. Oh, that's I wouldn't put it past Mateo. I wouldn't put it past.
I do recall some town folk in Greensboro saying, I heard you really were doing well with the Bailey the other day. I've been here two days. How does anyone know anything about this? Small town.
Oh, that is too funny. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, and thanks to Mateo for hanging out and rocking on the soundboard. And we're going to have at least one more sound effect before the end of the show.
All right, let me see if I can figure this out. See? The aha moment.
Three cheers for cheeses. We will see you next, or in 2 weeks, on Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network.